wanna feel joy. Hello and welcome. Some of you have had a recent joy experience. Who had turkey by Chef Nina Perez tonight? By her own admission, it's the best turkey she's ever made. So congratulations to you. And I'm sorry for all of you others. You have to come back. But you who had it, your Thanksgiving, let's just consider that the real Thanksgiving has happened and just forgive family or yourselves for whatever turkey we produce following. But here's cheers to a great artist, Nina Perez. My name's Kenyon Victor Adams. I'm the director of the Arts Initiative at Grace Farms Foundation. We are so glad that you joined us this evening, especially after such a storm as we've been experiencing here. So thank you for coming out. If this is your first time here, will you just raise your hand and let us know? Wow, fantastic. I want to welcome you especially to Grace Farms. If you're wondering, where am I? That's all right, we're only 3 years old. Opened the doors in 2015. Grace Farms is a new center advancing initiatives in nature, arts, community, justice, and faith. I invite you to visit, please, the beautiful website, gracefarms.org. Don't forget to go to the arts page as well to find out all about the good work that is happening among all the five initiatives and here in this unique place on site. So welcome. The Arts Initiative, as you will get a sense of tonight, develops new collaborative and site-responsive works at the intersection of the visual, literary, and performing arts. And tonight's program is part of the Foundation's Practicing series, the name of the series, Practicing, which brings together artists and other practitioners with a range of perspectives to examine four complex subjects: empathy, awe, as an awestruck, silence, and joy. In 2018, the Arts Initiative has undertaken a year-long exploration of the subject of joy. Practicing Joy, as the workshop series has been called, marks the culmination of the Practicing series, but only begins the process of sort of synthesizing and sharing with our audiences, yourselves among them, the harvest of multimedia outcomes and discoveries, works in process, nascent works developed here in this exploration over the last 3 years. It's produced a suite as well of really stellar programs for our young artists, our children and families. I hope you had a chance already, and if not, you're in for a thrill, to experience our current exhibition, which is really the heartbeat of our year-long journey. It's a three-part installation called Joy Still, by the brilliant artist Julianne Swartz. It's on exhibit through March 2019, so tell your friends, and if you didn't experience it yet, come back. It's set in three parts of the River Building, including a very ambitious work in this space, which includes a number of speakers and thousands of feet of wire sending sound through the floor. So Julianne's done something quite wonderful here. Don't miss that, come back. It's another way to help synthesize our explorations on joy. Each of the workshops actually has produced various projects and dozens of public program offerings for all ages, including a new ballet, 2 participatory art projects, 3 musical scores, and weekly family programs for our young artists and creative families. So tonight, in a sense, is the end of a certain part of our experimentation around these 4 subjects and our investigations. So it's been a 3-year journey, and these artists who are here tonight will be part of the last contributions to that phase. Let me just tell you some of the things we've learned over the last 3 years. We learned about the necessity, but also the limits and insufficiencies of empathy. Its contingency to silence, to the stillness of awe, and its seemingly inevitable tendency to threaten the very subjectivity it seeks to embrace, empathy. We understood the benefits of awe experiences to expand moral aspirations and shift behavior through encountering the small self in proximity to nature, the numinous, or a harrowing music and dance performance, as Galim brought here as part of that. 7 definitions of silence became 25, and we found ourselves working within the dialectic of contemplation and action, while new choreography grew equally out of poetry and mindfulness practices. In the spring of this year, following our winter workshop and showing of Meredith Monk's latest masterwork, Sell Your Songs, the Arts Initiative began in earnest its investigation of joy, and this week, just in the last couple days, including a heavy snow, we convened our final workshop on joy with contributions from some extraordinary thinkers and makers, some of whom you'll meet tonight. The group engaged new poems by Nicole Seeley, a wonderful American poet and the head of the Caveh Kanem Poet Collective, lectures from artist Philandis Thames, scholar Adam Stern of the Yale Program for Studies in Antisemitism, dancer and choreographer Camille A. Brown, and of course, an exciting work in process from essayist Garnet Cadogan. These remarkable artists and thinkers are offering us material for substantive engagement and inspiration around our dialogues about this aspect of our searchings. Tonight, we're sharing ideas about joy's relationship to resistance and survival. Theologian Willie Jennings, who's a part also of the exhibition by Julianne Swartz, and is a great theologian living right here in Connecticut, whose voice has taken up residency in the corridor of this building, thanks to Julianne, he figures joy and the work of attending to and sustaining joy as a mode of resistance against despair and all its forces, against all that would make us, in Willie's words, believe that life is not worth living. Joy working, he calls it. Joy working. Joy work. So tonight we will hear from and celebrate some of the artists whose work has expanded our perceptions of joy and of what is urgent and vital for human knowledge and flourishing in such times as these in which we live. There's a lot I could say about Garnet Cadogan. A meal or a drink with Garnet will never in the history of the world last less than an hour. He's also one of the best minds on Haitian music, Jamaican gospel, Bob Marley, and other forms that there is. And he's a razor-sharp theological critic to boot. Garnet is a writer. He has come to be known as an essayist of the highest order. Given tonight's program, which really will serve as a kind of meditation on the themes proposed, I think it is equally important to recognize that Garnet is a walker, and that Garnet has taken up walking with the same level of seriousness and expansiveness that moves and defines a great choreographer like Camille A. Brown. Always present in body and time, Garnet fuses the steps of the walker with the words on his pages, such that each step becomes enmeshed in the indelible inkiness of the daily, until readers and walkers alike find themselves inextricably involved in the actual. Garnet's recent essay, Black and Blue, also reappeared as Walking While Black, has in this very way demonstrated a new form of mark making, revealing the democratic, costly, improvisational, and dare I say, joyful spaces of the here and now. Here with his truly prescient insights on our subject, it's my great pleasure to introduce the delightful and brilliant Garnet Cadogan.
When I grow up, I want to be like the person he just described. Thank you all for coming out. I'm Jamaican, so one definition of joy is not this weather. As you know, for Jamaicans, we believe that anything beneath 60 degrees means God hates you. But we're talking about joy, so let me not talk about the things that joy is not. Though funny enough, with joy, whenever you hear or read discussions about joy, people often begin or spend a significant amount of time saying what joy is not. It's like walking in a house and there are five kids and you ask the mom about the one in front of you and she go, well, he's not like this, 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 and that one. And so that's often how people speak of joy, that joy isn't something. And I try to distinguish it from the nearest siblings, you know, happiness, pleasure, humor. I mean, think of this, for example. This is from a lovely essay called Joy, written by Zadie Smith, well worth your time. And she begins by, again, making that distinction, saying, it might be useful to distinguish between pleasure and joy, but maybe everybody does this easily, all the time. And only I am confused. A lot of people seem to feel that joy is the only most intense version of pleasure. Arrived at by the same road, you simply have to go a little further down the track. That has not been my experience. And if you ask me if I wanted more joyful experiences in my life, I wouldn't be at all sure I did. Exactly because it proves such a difficult emotion to manage. Or Bono, when he was touring on his last album and they were interviewing him in Rolling Stone, said this: unlike happiness, joy is one of the hardest human emotions to contrive for an artist. But it's the mark of my favorite artists, whether that be the Beatles, Prince, Beethoven, Oasis. Wait, did he say Oasis? I guess he did. It is life force itself. And I think something to do with the spilling over of gratitude for just being alive. I mean, I think, for example, and this thing of gratitude, of, you know, joy is something like spilling over. It's not merely the spilling over, it's this wanting it to linger, to hold on to it. So when people ask me, what is joy? I don't say joy is not something, but I often don't give a definition. I point them to something in which they can share it in it, because it's the one thing, more than anything, is a thing characterized joy as an emotion. It's propensity, it's readiness, it's willingness, it's hunger to share and to replicate itself. I mean, think, for example, of this. If somebody say, well, what's joy, Garnet? I'm like, oh, listen to Aretha Franklin.
Thank you.
So there's something about joy and recognition that if you can't define it, if you can't fully explain it, that in contact with it, in contact with emotion, you recognize it. But it's not only that, there's a recognition also, you know, with yourself, within yourself, that joy is a tendency to hover around recognition. That in moving towards something, you said, hold on, I recognize it. I recognize not only emotion, but you often recognize yourself in that very thing. The things that give you joy are often experiences, the memories, the situations, the context in which there's a deep recognition that something of yourself you can see in that, or something of self of who you are, who you used to be, or who you wish you could be. I mean, I hear Aretha Franklin, and the recognition is not only the deep emotion, but I recognize all the things that I can't be. I mean, you listen to her voice. I mean, we're about to sit dance here, but you listen to Aretha Franklin, and you feel like, oh, so that's what a voice is like when it dances, the way it leaps and turns and twirls and stops and jumps and bends and curves and curls and, you know, just, you know, all these phenomenal acrobatic things that on my best days, in fact, on my best days, people ask me, please, please don't sing. But, you know, the singers among us, on your best days, you couldn't even reach a shadow of it. But it's this recognition of something that it, you know, appeals to somehow, this deep recognition of the humanness of somebody, the humanness of yourself. So it's this shared emotion. I mean, I think when I was a kid, you know, I was in an age before cell phones, you know, the very young ones here can't imagine that age. But we used to have something, I was in the age in which you didn't know who was calling until you picked up that phone. And so there's no caller ID, and so that coworker who exhausted you all day and you really don't want to hear another hour of him talking, you didn't know he's calling until you picked up the phone. So people worked at a schedule in Jamaica, and I'm sure they did the same thing here in the States, where my mom didn't answer the phone, and so we answered the phone. And I would say, hello, Kenyon, you're calling. And I looked at my mother, so you'd always announce a person's name, and mother could go. I said, I'm sorry, she's not here. And so, you know, all our kids, our three boys would do that, and then my youngest brother picked up the phone one day. Hello? My mom said to tell her she's not here. Which then made me the designated caller. So we worked with that whole formula. But my mind goes back to that. It's not merely humor for me, but there's this joy. And the joy comes from, you know, recognizing the kind of comical schemes you create to get out of being frank and direct and honest. You know, the recognition comes from, you know, seeing, even though that very tense relation going up with my mom, that the different times or even in our well-laid, you know, follies, that, you know, I could find some kind of humor, you know, out of it. And in sometimes sharing that story, I've recognized other people haven't gotten merely laughter from it, but they've gotten joy because in that they've seen their own parallel stories. They've seen their echoes in the ways in which they have family members or friends, or they themselves, you know, have created any number of different comical ways to get around, you know, being direct or being honest or, you know, confronting the things in life they don't want to confront. And so there is that, you know, joy as recognition. But there is, you know, also, you know, the recognition of, like, sometimes the simple things, joy as presence. Think of this remark again from Zadie, from that same lovely essay. You think that people would like to cook for or eat with me. In fact, I'm told it's boring. Where there is no discernment, there can be no awareness of expertise or gratitude for special effort. Don't say that was delicious, my husband warns. You say everything's delicious. But it was delicious. It drives him crazy. All day long, I can look forward to a popsicle. The persistent anxiety that fills the rest of my life is calmed for as long as I have the flavor of something good in my mouth. And though it's true that when the flavor is finished, the anxiety returns, we do not have so many reliable sources of pleasure in this life as to turn our nose up at that one that is so readily available. especially here in America, a pineapple popsicle. Even the great anxiety of writing can be stilled for the 8 minutes it takes to eat a pineapple popsicle. And so joy lingers. There's something, even that short pleasure, that joy has this tendency to try to snatch. I don't know, it feels almost like one of those emotions that has a kind of longing for transcendence or the pretense of transcendence. It has a way of trying to take a moment and trying to extend it forever and reach beyond the moment itself, extends beyond itself. That something in joy that lingers, that in that good joke lasts for a moment, or if you're a really good comedian, it can last for, you know, quite a few moments. But joy lingers, it wants to hold on. You know, I remember that being that designated caller, and it lingers, something that stretches out inside of me, you know, that joy lingering. When I'm talking to Kenyon earlier, and he's mentioning hearing James Brown, and you know, his song where James Brown is talking about joy, but he keeps talking about satisfaction. And that right in the neighborhood of joy is this sense of satisfaction, this state, you know, this moving beyond a moment and wanting to have a state of satisfaction. And you know, speaking of the popsicle, I mean, there's a whole tradition, a long, rich tradition of photographers photographing somebody with a popsicle. I guess the photographers were clued in on something that we all know, that somewhere near the top of the food chain is a popsicle. That's the first thing they knew. And second is that, you know, around these simple things, the simple moments, the single gestures in life, the simple pleasures lies joy. You know, something lasting, something that longs to take you to a state of satisfaction. And for tonight, well, for the workshop, one of the poets that Grace Ram so wonderfully brought on board, Nicole Seeley, wrote a poem called Practicing Joy or Man Wearing Sunglasses and Eating a Popsicle. That because the poem is partially responding to that great phenomenon, one of the great wonders of the world, eating a popsicle. But it's also responding to a photograph by Charles Tini Harris for Man Eating a Popsicle. Well worth digging up. Don't look for it now, you know, all the Googlers. Give me 2 more minutes to be boring, and then you can do it. So this is Nicole Seeley, Practicing Joy. My God, I tell you, we're the same, you and I. In the heat, you want what I want. The sun on your face, popsicle in your mouth. What did you think I was going to say? There's only one way to endure summer. Sunglasses on my human face and a popsicle in my human mouth. Let me say it again. What did you think I was going to say? Only one way to endure summer. Sunglasses on my human face and a popsicle in my human mouth. There are people, just the thought of their face brings anger to me. If I want to be angry, I can just go, oh yeah, that guy. We all have in our life that guy. And there's so many emotions we can just quickly invoke it by just calling a particular memory, you know, calling a particular experience. Joy, not so easily. There's something about joy that Nicole Seeley captures right here. And it's the ways in which joy hangs on to, clutches to so often, surprise, serendipity. That we often don't even know the things that will bring us joy. You know, we have some good guesses, and often are the things that really bring us pleasure, happiness. But the things that brings us joy, you know, so often, you know, hang around in the neighborhood, in on the block, with serendipity, with surprise. That joy often is surprising. Joy often surprises. And so, you know, who knew that walking past and seeing a 5-year-old girl talk to her mother as if she was 35-year-old would bring that sense of joy? You know, or who knew that seeing 2 73-year-old sisters, twins, you know, hug and play and sort of prance around with each other, as I saw a few weeks ago in New York City in Jackson Heights, you know, like, you know, so childlike as if they were 5, would bring such a sense of joy. That for days, the thought and the memory of it just lingered, and I kept finding myself wanting to return to it, almost selfishly ignoring everything, wanting to race back, you know, to that special moment and extend it. You know, who knew that something like just seeing, you know, a big grown person sucking a lollipop, you know, when you're trying to rent a car from them, and they're taking all the time in the world, and you're all to be frustrated, and you're all to be annoyed, but to seeing this person just having all the joy in the world, sucking on the lollipop when all the customers are fuming, would bring you such joy. It's sort of reminding me of that Jamaican thing. Do you know soon come? Have you heard that expression? It's a soon come, which means, you know, back, you know, pretty soon. In Jamaica, it could be anything from 5 minutes to 5 days. It's more like an existential promise than a passage of time. And so, I mean, I'm saying it partially as a mini apology to all the staff here. I'm sorry for all my soon comes, Grace Farms. Public apology. But back to it again. There, you know, and so it's very much a surprise, very much serendipity. And so as much as we can't just quickly invoke and pull this emotion from out of thin air the way we can think of that guy and get angry, there are ways in which we can open ourselves to joy. You know, we speak of joy as resistance, and you know, it's often thought of in, you know, strong sociopolitical terms, that, you know, we're going to have our joy to, you know, oppose, you know, the great inhumanities of the world, the ways in which people are humiliated and insulted and undermined and oppressed. But there's a different way of thinking of joy as resistance. You know, the joy that resists the things that make us so focused on mastery, so locked in our own worlds and our own silos, we've sort of shut ourselves off from surprises, shut ourselves off from serendipity. Maybe it's the walk in me. You know, as Ken and Tilly, I love walking. I love walking so much that I've had many, many, many a writer friend said, should we pull together some money for him and buy him a, you know, Metro card in New York so he can travel around? I said, no, I really want to walk. They're like, no, we pay you cab fare. I said, no, I really do want to walk. And they're like, but it's 4 hours. I'm like, exactly. That's the point of giving myself over to serendipity. So maybe it's the walk in me that says, you know, has this longing. But I think that there's a wonderful resistance, the kind of resistance that puts you in that place where you encounter, or you're the person, you know, sucking on that popsicle or that lollipop, you know, by, you know, a world in which we're so buried in our faces in smartphones and our ears covered with headphones, in a world in which we're so locked into our own pathways and our own regularities, a world in which we're so focused so much on mastering the things before us and mastering life, that we've missed the mystery in life. We've missed the ways in which to be surprised by others, to be surprised by our very selves, the ways in which we've missed that more than anything else, that joy is actually really a way of hearing, a way of seeing the world. That joy is a way of seeing the world and reminding ourselves that we can sometimes imagine people to be more than we believe them to be. Seeing the world and being reminded that people can sometimes surprise us in their capacity for humor, in their capacity for love, also in their capacity for annoyance, as my family will tell you about me. But in a joy is partially presence. As we heard there, that presence with Aretha, or think, for example, of, you know, who I think may, of all musicians, for me, maybe the most joyous, that just 2 seconds of his presence, and it does something else. The sense of pleasure you have in the way it lingers. Armstrong for me. You can see this personality coming through the horns. I know it's cold, but it can move. Thank you. Notice you didn't hear Armstrong, but I bet you anybody who knows Armstrong music already started having him in their heads, started having a sense of his presence, you know, that gravelly voice, almost like Cookie Monster with a lot more rhythm. And so your brain went to, you know, Armstrong. There's something with joy and recognition, the way joy recognizes and the way joy holds in a lingo. And so sometimes we need joy, not only because of our desire to recognize things and the desire for recognition and recognize ourselves in others and recognize our humanness with others, but also because the ways in which people aren't recognized, ways in which, you know, to use T.S. Eliot, you know, humankind cannot be a reality. Sometimes the world becomes too much. And so sometimes our memory goes to things that we don't want to remember. I think of Lucille Clifton and that wonderful poem where she says, "They ask me to remember, but they want me to remember their memories. And I keep on remembering mine." And so in cases like that where you keep on remembering yours and they aren't particularly happy, they aren't particularly the kind of things that give pleasure, they have the things that linger that you'd love to escape from, you'd like to wrench yourself from, you often resort to kind of subversion. That joy sometimes lingers or is the underbelly of a kind of humor, inside joke. We often talk about, you know, in joy and humor. I started off by saying the ways in which we try to distinguish joy from its nearest siblings, whether it be happiness, whether it be pleasure, whether it be humor. And we often think of joy as humor, but joy has a big-heartedness to it that even humor can't reach, much as we love humor. I mean, humor, especially when you think of these memories you don't want to have, sometimes you need to share a sense of solidarity among others, and you need to have a kind of humor where humor draws its circle, humor draws a family and gathers people around to it, that we're all on the inside together, we're all of these shared set of memories or a shared set of assumptions. And so you think of subversive humor. I mean, I think of like a lot of black comics that I grew up, you know, liking and loving because of the ways in which they've managed to poke at a lot of problems and different humiliations, the humiliations which come merely because of, you know, the shade that you have to move through the world with. And sometimes you can have a, you know, humor in open, a way in which I had to learn that you couldn't speak frankly or openly, the way my mother chose not to speak frankly and openly, and sometimes, you know, the consequences at worst for her was she was going to have somebody boring from work she had to endure. But there are people who speaking frankly and openly, you know, would have, you know, levels of humiliation or oppression or even death for that honesty. So they learn to joke subversively, and you have the kind of humor where you have codes in among each other. I could make a joke to Kenyon, and he knows what I'm saying, but others would be very bothered by our sense of play or freedom. You know, the consequences on us would be quite awful. And so you learn that the wonderful subversive humor in which you can have that playfulness with each other and gather around and shut others out. And humor even works that even if it's not subversive. Humor has a tendency to pull together and gather around itself, a tribe, and shut others out. And so you can go, oh, I don't get out of black humor. I feel shut out of black humor. But it's not the same thing when you think of like black joy. That's the nature of joy, to be infectious, to be inclusive, to be open, to draw everyone in. You can see humor or hear humor and recognize there's a kind of laughter going on and I don't get what's going on. And you can set joy interlaced with that humor. And suddenly you start laughing and you don't know why you're laughing. You don't understand the joke, you don't get the joke. But the mere recognition of someone else expressing joy, the mere recognition of joy induces in you joy. And so joy is like that. Joy makes that other move past humor, past pleasure, in which it's so ready to share of itself, so ready to extend that circle and to get beyond being tribal and pull and loop and lasso everyone in. Now the extrovert in me, see a few introverts there going, oh God, I have to take off these headphones, take my head out of the smartphone and start talking to people. I'm not like you, Garnet. I don't want to do that. No, please, please. Well, the great thing about joy is that joy is contemplative. It's one of those emotions that moves so quickly and readily more than the others. to contemplation. So it's not merely that you recognize yourself in others or you recognize others' humanness, but you're also quick to begin to contemplate. Not so much that you sort of take away. It's like a joke. If you start pulling it apart too much, then you just kill the joke. Or, as my family say, you know, or you could just tell a joke like Garnet. That's one show of killing a joke. But it's the same thing also with joy in terms of trying to pull it and break it apart. So I'm not suggesting that. But what I'm suggesting is that joy loves to linger. Joy loves to stare, to gaze, to hover, to clasp hands, to contemplate. And so, I mean, maybe it's because I'm here in a place like that that gives itself over to so much contemplation with all these paths that are, you know, winding and seem that they were created and designed by somebody who understands the value and the richness and the depth and the power of serendipity and surprise, you know, because of, you know, ponds and meadows and, you know, the echoes of Arboretum here, because of so many opportunities here to give yourself over to thinking about nature and then having it turn back on you and having you think about the self, why I'm in this mode. But give yourself over to chances to contemplate, to recognize, to encounter others. In other words, give yourself over to joy. And it's funny because joy is one of those emotions you can return, that recognition, you can return in memory. It's often something that comes through memory, you return in memory. And you can actually remember in something that's painful and still experience joy. Unlike any other emotion, and Zayd's essay ends on this note, but all of us know that experience, that in the midst of grief, you're at a funeral, and someone who's gone, someone who's been so deeply attached to, you can at once feel deep grief and feel joy, the person. I love walking in Harlem. There are few neighborhoods in the entire world I love like Harlem, that you just get off the subway or the bus or out of a cab, and already, like, the streets sound like they're trying to echo what was just happening that we're hearing in Armstrong with Skokin. It's just there, you know, the rhythms of the streets, you know, the warmth, the openness, the generosity of people, the snatches of remarks you hear, you know, the humor, the, you know, the ways in which the streets themselves come alive and dance and people are intermingling with each other, the ways in which you just see so much of humanity in all its myriad and varied and multitudinous and fascinating forms in that work. But much as I love that, there is a corner in Harlem which for me is the worst corner in the entire world. And it's a corner of 116th and Lenox, which if you know Harlem, that sounds like blasphemous. I mean, that's a corner very close to an African market where you have, you know, dozens and dozens of countries from across the continent with people, you know, with all their the very warmth and humor and vibrancy that I was speaking of here earlier. But my best friend had lived on that corner. And we used to take multiple walks until cancer had its say. And so for years, I would avoid that corner. I would be in a cab, and I remember going to the airport. And again, there is American time, there is Jamaican time, and then there is Garnet time. So I was on Garnet time. I was rushing to the airport. It was 5 minutes before, you know, check-in. So I was rushing, hoping to make the flight after the flight I was supposed to be on. And the driver said, oh, there's something backed up here. I can just switch in and go 116th and we'll make it. And I said, I don't care. I don't care if they buy a new ticket. You cannot go past that corner. No. And the driver said, I said, nope, we're not going past that corner. And so I did miss my flight and I have to buy another ticket. But I just couldn't. And then eventually, I started walking and I passed that corner and I still walk past that corner. And time and again, when I'm walking past that corner, there's this deep joy, you know, by this flush of memories, this recognition of the kind of friend that I was gifted for a while, that I had as a gift, the kind of relationship that was possible. But often that joy is there coexisting with this deep grief that I'll pass sometime and there's a smile on my face and tears running down my eyes. Which may explain why every now and then somebody thinks that I've been smoking something that I shouldn't be smoking. But it's like, nope, it's the coexistence of joy and grief, you know, at the same time. Marley with Smile Jamaica. And some songs can do that. It's very particular rhythms that bring it back to home, where there's that sense of loss. Really? ill if I'm not being home. Feeling down. But that joy also recognizing home. And then sometimes it's a small snatchity. Sometimes you just need to hear just a small sliver of a moment. So joy is a way of like eavesdropping. Joy is also, along with being the most generous of emotions, can sometimes be the most shameful of emotions. That it has a way of trying to eavesdrop, of trying to see what's going on with a moment and try to bring a moment in and expand that moment and take it for itself. The opening of the planets. And you don't need much. Notice that? Just that one short thing. That's Jupiter from Gustav Holst, you know, the bring of jollity. And so with joy, just even just you know, a few movements, you know, a few movements of the face, in a gesture, a smile, the memory of something brings us back to that place. And so, walk, contemplate, open yourself to the world, remembering that part of joy is that recognition of our own humanness, often our own humanness in others, recognize of other people's humanness, that gives us this much more ready openness to other selves, and thereby deepen, enriches, strengthens, refreshes our very selves. So yeah, it's recognition, it's contemplation, its presence, its openness, but it's also complicated. This is Richard Wilbur for the Student Strikers, reminding us how both joy and pain can coexist and why we should be more than ready to open ourselves to them both. Go talk with those who are rumored to be unlike you and whom it is said you are so unlike. Stand on the stoops of their houses and tell them why you're out on strike. It is not yet time for the rock, the bullet, the blunt slogan that fuddles the mind toward force. Let the new sound in our streets be the patient sound of your discourse. Let me repeat that. Let the new sound in our streets be the patient sound of your discourse. Doors will be shut in your faces, I do not doubt. Yet here or there it may be, they will start. Much as the lights blink on a block at evening, changes of heart. There are your houses, the people are not unlike you. Talk with them then and let it be done. Even for the gray wife of your nightmare sheriff and the guardsman's son. Pain, joy, but only through openness, only through reminding ourselves that we have to be in the world and allow the world to be in us, to imprint itself, to make its mark on our imagination, as we extend our own imaginations, our own very selves, by way of moving through the world, headphones off a little bit more, faces out of the phones a little bit more, ready to know other selves, let other selves know us, complicated and messy and frustrating as it might be, but knowing, gee, isn't it all worth it for the joy? So let's be joyous and let's be, as Baldwin reminds us in Friday's Time, sensual. As he said, to be sensual, I think, is to respect and rejoice in the force of life itself, and to be present in all that one does, from the effort of loving to the making of bread. And maybe, just maybe if we do that, we can end up, frustrating as life might be, dancing the way Kevin Young describes in Limelight Blues, a poem where he's talking about the frustrations and the perils of just moving through life, trying to enjoy the mundane task of walking, but not easily doing so because of black skin and many times the associations and the frustrations that attach to that because of prejudice. But at one point he talks and he speaks about crowds gathering and looking at him. But his ability to still move around and live in this world because of joy. And he says, when I dance, which is often, the moon above me wields its disco lights. And with that, I end with good old Brothers Johnson and Stump. Who knows, maybe this will give you some joy as it has given me. Thank you.